Hello and welcome everybody to the Melomancy Podcast, episode 91, the first ever Value for Value podcast about video games. My name is Dylan.
My name is Victim.
I'm Rick.
If you don't know what those words mean, value for value, there is a handy dandy website for you called valueforvalue.info, which I will drop in the show notes that kind of explains the concept. But TLDR, imagine a bunch of free and open source software used to bring YouTube-like super chats and Twitch-like donation messages and all the modern conveniences of streaming without a middleman to RSS feeds. And we're the first ones to have a podcast about video games that does that specific thing. So every podcast should be like this. And you can get a modern podcasting app from newpodcastapps.com to support these new features. Features so good, even Spotify implements them over time. Like they recently added transcripts. That was a new thing. I think I think by default they're like AI generated if you upload on Spotify's little platform thing. But like
most are.
I
think you need to edit them manually too. Yeah.
Right. That's the RSS 2.0 thing that was added where you can add transcripts in. Like that was invented for podcasting 2.0 and Spotify was like, that's a really good way to do it. We'll just support that instead of building our own thing.
I like Spotify. They also made a recent change that's kind of annoying me where videos play on the side now for some songs if you have it in your browser. The issue with that is that it makes my monitors black out.
That's not right.
I don't know what's causing that, if that's a me issue or a them issue, but
I mean, it might be a you issue. That's
just beat them up, Vic.
I just wish I could turn it off, that's all. And I mean, maybe I can, but I haven't found a setting for it yet.
That's a little strange, but the little videos have been there for a while. I still like Spotify. It's the only algorithm in my life that's not trying to fuck me.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm happy to pay for it, but it's like I know it's not perfect, and I know they're shortchanging all those poor artists. But like I've discovered so many new artists thanks to Spotify's algorithm that like I would never have found otherwise. So it's like it kind of pays off.
The way I justify it, right, is I use it free. I just keep it up in my other monitor and I click play on each song, so I never get ads. It's great, but it's very very tedious. But I justify using it because, sure, they may be shortchanging artists that I love and didn't, you know, I would like to see them succeed and make more music. However, I'm probably not going to buy their music anyways. I've never bought music before. I was a LimeWire kid. I don't know how to buy music. I only know how to get it on sketchy platforms that it would rather send me porn than what I asked for.
Do they even sell music in Canada? Like, that seems out of your budget.
Yeah, probably. I don't even know what an album costs anymore. That's a scary thought. But yeah. So it's just like I they're getting some money for my free listening, so I feel like that's quite literally better than nothing.
So it's been a bit. It is currently, let me look at my phone. The year in our Lord 2024, July the 18th. Last episode, that we didn't record, right? I went on a vacation. I already explained it. Last episode, go ahead and go back and listen to that. But I'll have you know, I wasn't able to edit the episode until like the following Monday or Saturday. And so I was like, okay, let's not record last week. Let's just wait so that Saturday comes back. Because I have this like standing event that goes on every 2 weeks on Saturday, right? And the week that doesn't happen, which is this week, right, I have all the time in the fucking world to edit the podcast. It's like the perfect time to do it. And so I was like, I can't move these plans, and everything's all fucked up, so we're just gonna wait a week. And now everything is back to normal, and the next episode should come out in 2 weeks time after you are listening to this one. So
yep. We're back on schedule.
That is why I did that. So sorry for the delay. If you are part of that, I've already forgotten the name, that Noster group that was looking for content creators to sign. I totally made an application, but we were totally in the middle of that hiatus crunch thing. And it's like, well, they probably didn't want me.
Well, shit happens.
Shit happens. But, not too heavy of an agenda. We have a few things to talk about. Where do you guys want to start?
I'm happy to start wherever.
What's on your mind?
Well, I mean, what were we? What are our big ones? Let's give people who've been patient a big one to start with.
Let's get the big one out of the way. Victim, you have been streaming a hot new video game.
Yes.
We should talk about the hot new video game.
So, Xenosune Zero, because obviously I'm hopelessly addicted to fucking gacha games. I don't know. It's one of those games that I got into knowing that I was going to like it. So it kind of feels weird to review it in a way where I know I'm just going to say it's a great game. But I guess to just kind of like lay it out for people, it's got a little bit of those like early 2000s vibes, like from games like Jet Set Radio or I guess things in that vein. I feel like it also kind of touches on like some of the cyberpunk themings, not aesthetics, which is nice. I mean, I'm all about that. So, but yeah, I'd say right now, it is a game that if you got into it, and let's say, like, I don't even fucking like gacha games, because I don't blame you. It's something actively trying to siphon your wallet is not a fun prospect.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything you're going to say that's going to convince Rick to try it.
No, exactly. But I was going to say for other people out there, though, that maybe are on the fence, and like, damn, that looks great, but like, I don't know. The game does provide you with a cast of characters that are extremely competent, which is the first time I've ever seen that happen in a gacha game. Like, they just genuinely feel like good characters out the gate.
Well, to be fair,
you don't even really need to spend money.
The Genshin Impact characters you start with, if you get their constellations, which requires you to pull on the bad banner,
some people say they're harder to get than the high rarity characters, but
they are, but it's very satisfying to use the free characters in high level content. But, like, it's not fucking worth it. Whereas, sounds like ZZZ. I don't know how you pronounce it. I say ZZZ.
Yeah, either or.
Sounds like it's easier.
You've got to remember, he's from part of the Britland Empire, so...
we call it ZZZ.
Do you really? What?
No, no. Trust me when I say no, I do not.
No, Vic is
only highly nationalistic Canadians say Z. That's all I'm going to say.
But yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, ZZZ is would be what, you know, your British YouTubers would be calling it.
Yep.
ZZZ. Zedless zone.
No. It's Z, not a Z. Is
I know, I
works.
Know.
Oh, okay.
Zedless Zone Zedrow.
Oh. Sounds beautiful.
That hurts.
What kind? So it's a gacha game.
Like nails on a chalkboard. Yum, yum.
What do you do in this gacha game?
You know what? You fight things as per, I guess, I feel like a lot of fucking video games are like that. It's hard to describe that. But, like, it's an action game. Like, I don't know. Think, like, your Devil May Cries, your Bayonettas, your, you know, those are the two big ones that always come to fucking mind.
Final Fantasy 16?
Yeah. You think games like that, but it's in like, instance zones. And the way you travel between instance zones is what people are calling TV sections. And a lot of the fans hate these. I don't know why. I actually have no idea why. They're kind of like puzzle segments that have like different criteria depending on like which ones you're doing. And they're usually themed based on which of the quote unquote hollows you're in, which I won't bother explaining. It's a story thing. Basically, it's where the missions take place. It's really kind of cool. In a weird way, it's kind of like doing puzzles in Genshin Impact, except the layout is put in front of you and it's taught to you as you do it. So, like, proper puzzles. They're not necessarily difficult, mind you. I mean, that's still an issue, but they're... I don't know, it's really interesting to me. It's neat. It fits the aesthetic and the theming of the game, like, to a T. I'm surprised that there are people out there that are like, this is the reason why I'm not playing the game. And I'm like, really? Like, I feel like it's such a minor thing to get hung up on if you're not going to play it. Like, if you don't want to play the game, just don't play it kind of deal. I don't know. But... actual combat though is fucking it's amazing. I'm getting my ass beat. The guys watched me lose on a boss fight the other night, and they were making fun of me. But I'm like, guys, it's actually fucking hard stuff.
Stop beating me up.
If I die in Genshin, it's because I fell asleep at the keyboard. Ooh. You know, so it's got that going for it. Which I think we briefly talked about Wuthering Waves. Wuthering Waves kind of didn't have that issue. I feel like I never really felt all that challenged in the game, despite everyone claiming that that's what its whole goal was. I'm like, I'd rather just boot up Devil May Cry 3 than play through Wuthering Waves.
I have an analogy for the Warframe players in the audience. Wuthering Waves got a lot of praise because of how involved it is compared to Genshin Impact, but that's kind of like playing Warframe, but you play as Harrow. It's like, oh, you have to use all four of your abilities in a certain order and based on the scenario, whereas other Warframes are like, oh, I just press one button, dude. Like...
It really, Wuthering Waves, and this is a controversial take in the Gacha world, I'll come out and say it. It quite literally is just Genshin reskinned, and with a little bit more flashiness to its combat. It effectively plays out the exact same way. You gather materials the same way. You fight bosses for the same exact things. There's some quality of life that, honestly, I feel like is just super unnecessary, but like was just tacked on. But I mean, that's a me issue, really. But And I think that a lot of people praise it because people want to hate Genshin that fucking bad. They're both fine games. There's nothing wrong with playing Wuthering Waves.
I don't know.
Comparing the two, it's like there's a lot that's the same there. And a lot of the tedium is the exact same.
I've heard that Wuthering Waves people are smelly.
Yeah, but yes, it's just like, I don't know.
To be fair, though, like as great as Zenless Zone Zero seems to be, right, it's still a HoYoverse game.
That's true.
What's cool about Wuthering Waves is that it is a competitor, not made by that same company.
And that's honestly the biggest thing about Wuthering Waves that's nice, is that no matter what you think of it, the more it grows, if it grows, I mean, I cannot predict the future, it means that Genshin has a fire lit under its ass. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
That's exactly what Warframe players were thinking when First Ascendant came out. Like, the verdict's not quite out yet on First Ascendant because it's too early. But
I think a lot of verdict is that it's not going to live very long.
Yeah, it's got a lot of problems, but they also like are fixing some of their problems. But like, I don't have the full scoop today for you on First Ascendant. But everyone was in the Warframe community was super excited for it because it was like Destiny 2 is not really competition. Destiny 2 is a dead game. Like,
well, right. They're doing really well at the tail end of their life cycle. Congratulations, guys. You did it at the end.
It's like nobody gives a shit about Destiny 2. Like, even Destiny 2 players don't like Destiny 2.
I'm still surprised that I see the player numbers for Destiny when it has, like, new content. Like,
well, it had its last content just drop.
That's true, too. I guess people are just getting in for the, like, to say they are done, probably.
They finish the story, whatever.
Yep.
Wait, awaits them at the end. I don't know what it could be. And, I mean, they might just remove it from the game later, so they have to play it now.
Yeah, really.
They keep removing fucking story content so that new players can't figure out what the fuck's going on.
Well, you know, what people are really excited for is being able to do something else with their life now.
Yeah.
They've been
let go.
They're finally free.
Yeah.
That's how I felt when Avengers Endgame came out. I'm like, I'm free. I'm finally free. I could just not go see the next movie. And then I didn't.
Yeah, I haven't seen another Marvel movie since.
I watched Civil War because my friend's like, bro, you're going to love it. This like, the Marvel universe, I'm surprised you haven't seen any of the movies. Like, let's go see it. Most mid-movie I've ever seen in my entire fucking life.
What was your context? Like, did you see the Marvel movies before that? Like, the fucking 10 of them?
I hadn't seen shit.
No, so then it can't be a good movie because... Exactly. So Marvel movies are episodic. Like, you have to watch the previous episode of the Marvel show to understand what's happening in the current version.
Yeah.
And that's fair. I get that context. It was just really funny that my friend's like, no, you don't worry. You can start anywhere. You'll love it.
That's not the fucking case.
Like, imagine...
This is so bad.
Imagine,
your friend's a moron.
Imagine somebody picked up, Chapter House Dune. That's, like, the fifth or sixth book. Okay. And they didn't read any of the ones. And they're like, who the fuck are these characters? What the fuck is happening? You won't fucking know. Like, don't do that.
It's just the absolutely the wrong answer. There is no correct answer that involves, let's start in the middle.
I feel like my wallet thanked me more, though, for only seeing one of the movies, so I'll at least walk away with that one.
It's like,
I don't think Marvel's bad, per se, but it's overdone. Like, all of the Marvel and basically Disney properties are all struggling under that right now, where they're like,
yeah,
we've done it to death, and we need this to continuously make money, print money forever. You know, the video game company problem that's plaguing things.
Think of the shareholder value.
Remember, everybody, if you decide that you want to make your company public, no, you don't.
Yeah. So I did want to make a comment that about MiHoYo, because they're, you know, they've gotten a bit of the blue check fire their way for whitewashing. I don't know what that
is. That true though?
Means.
Like,
well, they're no, like voice
you,
cast.
You said blue check. I don't think that means anything anymore.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, blue hair.
Whatever. So yeah. let me explain. So there is a new Boycott Genshin movement, and they have their chief complaint is there were leaks about the next region of the world, which is called Natlan. Which is what's the terrain of Natlan, real quick?
So
is it deserty?
So originally, what it was thought to be was heavily volcanic.
Okay,
but it's not. It's actually like lush, kind of like rainforest. Not like rainforest. In the you've been to Sumer, Dylan. Not like that specifically. Not like your jungly type. More like think like America, like Grand Canyon, but if it was overgrown a little bit.
Okay.
So like it's kind of got a little bit of that going.
So this region is the next big update for Genshin Impact. And some of the characters that will be released with this region have leaked, as they always do. Right. And all we knew about this region beforehand is the description that you just gave, as well as in the Genshin Impact prequel comic, there was a character who was critical to the Mondstadt lore, who had like tan skin and fiery red hair. Right.
Yeah, and her tribe. Yeah.
Right. So she was a slave, I think? The Mondstadt people had enslaved the Natlan people.
We know now that whatever happened at that point, basically there was a big ousting war, and some of the tribes fled. Their tribe got picked up by the Mondstadt nobles and turned to slaves.
Right. And then there was a big uprising led by this red-haired woman that led to Mondstadt being the all free all the time, no slaves ever. Freedom is our number one priority. Nation that you start the game in, right? And that they make that point super clear about they are not what they used to be, but that is what they used to be, and so people are mad that the leaks that they've seen for the characters they claim to be whitewashed. So the argument they make for them being whitewashed is the names of these characters are taken from mythology, and when you take names from mythology, like there's some like assumptions to be made about the character and what you expect them to be, because it's like, are you adapting the mythological figure, or are they just named after them? Why did you name them this thing?
So
right,
that's kind of the thing. Like we had this previously with another character called Candace from a couple patches into Sumer. She's from the desert. She has tan skin, but everyone got pissy because Candace. They probably took that from Candake. I can't remember how to fucking pronounce it, who's like some, I think Egyptian, I want to say Egyptian god, and people are like, in her depictions, she's like skin as black as midnight, and then people would do like fan art where it would look like they went like overblown, and I'm like, guys, this is literally the brown paper bag test. You're basically saying she's not black enough, and her name is Candace, not Candike or whatever. Like, this is some mental gymnastics. Now, it's a little different, I will admit, with Natlan. They are very close to directly taking names from different gods, but we already know that they're not gods. They're just humans. Like, they just happen to have those names because they're probably flashy names that are easy to research for a Chinese company that doesn't live in America. And I've tried to look up Native American and Native South American and all the whatever, right? Things from tribes. It's actually really difficult to do over the internet. It's not very easy. So I could kind of see a little bit of them like just saying, well, fuck it, these names are cool, they're the only names we can really like pull, let's just fucking use them,
right? And it's like, I mean, they didn't get mad when they named all the archons after the demons from the demonology book, like,
yeah, you know
who
what?
Fucking Fair. Cares
or so, or the fact when
a name is
where Spain, the only Spanish representation was a single mafia house in the quote unquote France region, or how the Germany region quote unquote is all about being drunkards.
I mean,
or
yeah,
how the Japanese region is only about like
discrimination,
xenophobia and discrimination. It's like, come on now, like they did every region. I say dirty, But like the regions are not one-to-one with real life. And that's always been the case. And nobody bitched and moaned when it was those three regions. They only bitched and moaned when it was Sumeru and Natlan.
Because they assumed that Sumeru was going to be like Arabic, but then they forgot that Iran exists, and their pale-skinned Arabs are pretty common.
It's like Southeast Asia mixed with like Northern Africa and the Middle East.
The sentiment I'm hearing is that, similar to the point I just fucking made, is that they can forgive Sumeru because Iran exists, right? But they're really mad about this new one. And they're mad about more than one character, but I have one example for you, right? There's one character that was revealed named Mavuika, M-A-V-U-I-K-A, right? And I don't know if this is the Archon or somebody, because, I mean, she's kind of got the hair.
It's believed to be the current Archon, yeah.
It's like the Archons in Genshin Impact, they all have, like, the glowy hair. So, like, I think this is the one. But the origin of this name is, it means angel in Swahili, right?
Okay.
And Swahili obviously is a language from West Africa. Now, this is a long, red-haired, pale-skinned, busty anime woman. Kind of looks like Mitsuru from Persona 3, if you know what I mean.
It'll come up later. I want to make a stipulation, too. She also looks like she's dressed like a biker chick. I'll explain why that matters later, potentially.
But it's like it's not what they were expecting. This boycott crowd is like, yeah, this is our time. We're going to boycott it. But you know what? The cringe part about it all is the people who are supporting this boycott. Yeah. They're not saying don't play the game. They're saying don't spend on the game. Don't roll. Don't put money in. But go ahead and do your dailies. Go ahead and play. Right? Like, don't uninstall. And it's like, what kind of a boycott is that? What the fuck are you smoking? Go play Wooa. Right? Go play a game that's not a fucking gacha game. Right? Like, if you want to hit them where it hurts, don't play their fucking game. Like, do you think they don't have metrics for how many players are logged in? Like, that they can sell to investors?
The most important metric is not how much person... Well, sorry. It is most money spent, but, like, the second most important metric is number of people logged in and number... Well, actually, not even number of people. Hours logged in. They don't... care about actual numbers, they care about hours.
They measure fucking everything. They know how long it took you to be a free-to-play player to spending for the first time, how much you spent, and how much you spent after, right? They have trends. They have ages of accounts. They have so many different ways to slice the data that suggests that if there's a lot of people playing, this many will become whales, this many will become low spenders, this many will stay free-to-play, and this is when they'll crack, right? Like, they have all these measurements, right? Like,
yeah, they know you better than you know you.
Yeah. So continuing to play the game is like the worst way to fucking boycott. Like, who cares if you don't spend? You're not even the target audience, and you're not even the biggest audience, right? Like, English speakers are the minority of the Genshin fan base, right? Yeah. I think, ironically, Japan is the biggest user base of Genshin Impact. Like, not even China, Singapore, right? Where the game company is based. It's actually Japan.
It depends, but it kind of like changes over time.
But it's like, boo-hoo, a bunch of loud Americans are going to like keep playing but not spend. Like, that is such a weak argument.
Well, a good example is, like, think about it this way. If you're going to appease an audience, right, and in your thoughts are, okay, well, I have my native audience that I understand and can interact with, even if they're assholes a lot of the time, but which is, in this case, the Chinese audience. Or do I appease the Western audience here that's up in arms and on fire? And one of the top posts from one of these guys literally was like, a dude responded like, "Is like, so why do you play the game then?" And he's like, "I don't. I've never played the game." His name was literally a character from Genshin Impact. He is a account where he makes fan art for this character from Genshin Impact. He's never opened the game before.
Which character was it? And why was it Zhao?
Child. Oh. It was Child.
But I was like, it was either him or Zhao.
It's just like, what the fuck? Like, okay, and you know what? I'll play devil's advocate for a second here. If you had a problem with something, doing something that you thought was genuinely egregious and horrible, which I don't think this is for the record, and you wanted to speak out about it because you saw it, fine. He doesn't have to play the game to have criticisms of the game. But, like, why are you calling for a boycott? Brother, you don't play the game.
Yeah, no, it's a bunch of low-value people trying to make things happen. Again, like before, we were talking about before we got on the show. It's a bunch of people who are choosing the only part activism that doesn't require them to leave their couch.
Yep.
They don't have to get any vitamin D to feel good about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actively doing nothing.
And I will say, would it be great if they were all like dark shades, like blacker characters or like more like Latin looking characters and had like a lot of that like stuff going on with their designs? Sure. But it's a Chinese company, and they have to make money. Even if you don't agree with how much money they're making, I totally get it. But that's not even the problem that people have. They're just like, oh, no, they're just racist. We're not going to look into the nuance of any of this. They're just racist. It's like...
I mean, you could say that about
China. It probably is racism, but it's also racism that pays their fucking bills.
I've literally seen tweets on Twitter where people pull out the Are You Black Enough chart, and they've pointed out some...
So much.
They point out there are some instances of Chinese companies or just Asian companies in general where they have more black characters than Genshin does. Like they do kind of have a problem, right?
Well, yeah, but I want to say something about those charts real quick though. There's something those charts don't ever admit, they don't ever talk about, and it's actually really disingenuous of them. A lot of the times, those charts do not take into account the contrast and color palettes of the games that they're based in. A lot of those characters with darker skin characters also happen to have darker palettes as a result. Genshin has a very bright color palette. It's very flashy and bright. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that when they do a darker skin character, they're not like fucking, they don't look like, I don't know how to phrase this. But like, they're not like sitting there with like...
Blackface?
They don't look real world black, I guess, is where I'm kind of going with that.
Right.
They look more like cartoony, like brighter... lighter complexion is a better way to phrase that.
Black
people.
You know, I have to say, a lot of their competition, their AAA competition, isn't doing better with their black characters.
True. Mm-hmm. At the very least, they're getting the culture correct. They're just not getting the skin correct.
Right. Well, we'll throw Ubisoft under the bus with Yasuke.
Oh, yeah.
And, not going to get into whether or not he existed or how much he existed, because that's been done to death by people who have a lot more free time than I do to do all the research. But basically, everything that's been printed about him that's been made in the modern world is a lie.
We found out very recently we did not know this when we last recorded. This is a recent revelation.
I feel bad for not knowing this. I actually did a lot of research on the guy back when
it turns out
anime
everywhere
came out.
You could do research about him was either fiction, anime, or... A lie peddled as realism because the guy was trying to sell his book. Fuck it. Thomas Lockley. That asshole. I'll put him on blast.
Thank you. I was looking for his name. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's Thomas Lockley. That piece of shit has been editing his Wikipedia to promote his book, basically. Basically, all of Yasuke's Wikipedia for the longest time always went back to his book. He peddled his book in Japan as fiction and in the West as fact.
I think that's the death knell for me, is that he literally peddled it as fiction in the one country he knew he couldn't get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that is damning for me, to the point that I'm like, well, so I guess he must have just genuinely been a slave. Like, I don't know what else to, like, what to take from that.
And,
which,
you know...
sucks. I'll admit, that fucking sucks. I think it'd be fucking cool if there was a black samurai. I thought it was cool when I heard about the other honorary samurai until I realized, it's like a fucking badge they were given. Like a fucking... like a medal that means fucking nothing. Which is so stupid to me.
So, Ubisoft actually took it two steps further. One, they've been stealing other people's IP and using it in their art book and shit. So that's one thing. But also, they're like, you know, what kind of music do black people like? I know, hardcore rap. And that's Yasuke's theme is rap.
Yeah, it's like, it's got hip-hop beats in the background, and it's like, that comes off kind of wrong. Like,
it does. If you're trying to tell me he's more than the color of his skin, try not to choose the most generic... I found this for free on whatever free music website you can get.
Why wouldn't they just go with like some like hip-hop. Traditional like African music if they really wanted to do that?
Well, they could have done African music. They could have done some of the most respected, like music coming or from even black just people,
Japanese
like,
music.
Yeah, so I was thinking
like a jazzy Japanese. That's what I was thinking. Like Japanese cool. with like the sweet, you know, Japanese instruments like the shami. I'm losing my brain. They're the Japanese banjo. I know it's shamisen. Shamisen. Thank you. And like fucking saxophones and shit. They could have made an amazing track that fit because if you want to play samurai as warrior poet, then there are some problems that I have with Yasuke's characterization. Why is he a thug? Like, in combat style. And why is he getting the most generic fucking hip-hop for his theme? Try to not be racist, Ubi.
Yeah, it sucks because, like, you know, it's really funny because just coming off the heels of talking about Zenless, Game has some of the best hip-hop I've listened to in a while, best EDM I've listened to in a while. Like,
honestly, I heard it and I thought, like, not from you, but like I heard it in the ads. I'm like, is this a new Persona game?
I was like
that's what I thought.
Like, if they were gonna at least give him a theme in that vein, at least put some fucking money behind it, man. Come on now. Like, how's the Chinese company nailing this shit better than you? Fucking Christ.
And you know the Game Awards are gonna throw it to Ascreed like they did God of War, even though it's not memorable.
I hope now that, like, it's becoming a bigger thing that it was, well, I think, from what I understand, he was a real, like, person.
Oh, he absolutely
He
existed.
Was just not at all any of the shit he was said to be.
Right. Basically, all that's been factually proven about him is that Nobunaga purchased him from the people who brought him over as a slave.
Yeah.
And probably treated him a lot better, because I don't think Japanese did slavery at the time.
No,
it was peasantry, basically, but
yeah,
he was a retainer, more or less.
Nobunaga was very well known, very well documented to be an eccentric guy. Like, the kind of guy that you don't fuck with because you don't know what he'll do. Like, he might laugh at your joke and then gut you. Kind of like a madman type deal. So, he probably thought, whoa, that guy's skin color is fucking weird. I love it. Like, I want him. How much?
Right.
He was probably, like, and that's a little racist, probably. I mean, it's probably a lot racist. But, like, he definitely bought him, not because he thought, oh, bro, this guy will be great in my farm. He probably bought him because he's like, damn, that'll be great to look at every once in a while.
Like, I've never seen that before.
Yeah. Also, like, there, you know, you could potentially talk about, like, intimidation factor. Like, look at this beast of a man that I have, which I know sounds racist when I'm talking about black people, but I mean it in the, like, dude fucking built like a truck.
Every depiction has him looking like he is, like, three times the size of everything around him, so yes. Who the fuck knows?
in full respect to how he is depicted in every piece of media that he is in, he is...
Even in
Ascreed,
he's, like, twice the size of every man you fight.
Yeah.
And that might be fun.
They've turned him into pure, like, thuggish gameplay style where he, like, busts through doors and shit.
Yeah.
Like, he can bust in, like, the Kool-Aid Man villain.
Oh, my goodness.
I will say, you know, the in a weird way, the worst part of all this is that the Assassin's Creed game, the gameplay, actually looks really fun. It looks like a mix between old Assassin's Creed and Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, like,
it actually looks
amazing
fun.
Game.
I just don't want to spend that kind of money on it. Also, I feel like there's a little bit of, like, I try not to let controversy drive my opinion, because I like, if it's a fun game, I just want to play it. I do not care. Right. Part of it's like, I feel a little internally bad about it, you know? It's like, I'll get it on sale sometime.
It feels kind of racist. Like, the game, like, when you look at it,
100%
it feels
is.
Racist.
It's not even just racist against him, it's racist against Japanese people, too.
Oh, yeah, like, no.
It very
Ubisoft
clearly did not... take any
terrible job.
Yeah, they did not take any liberty to, like, learn the culture that they were fucking representing at all, and it's, which is funny to me too, because apparently the game sold the best in Japan. But to be fair, the Japanese people also do not give a shit about controversy. They probably just saw a samurai game, cool.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but it also had the most struggle in Japan too.
Yeah,
because there was a lot of. Like, I don't know if it actually has become litigation, but there was a lot of talk of litigation, because just all the stuff that, all the assets, but all the IP that they stole, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's like, it feels wrong, because it's like, well, yeah, sure, they put the hip hop music as his theme. Like, that's a little suspicious, right? And it's like they went out of their way to have a black man as the protagonist where you're killing a bunch of Asian people, and then you put the modern hip hop music as his theme. Like, it's a little on the nose of like modern era problems.
Right? Their tagline, like, didn't help either.
What was the tagline?
fight back against an oppressive regime.
It's like, dude,
what do you mean?
That's because didn't they make the Portuguese the bad guys?
I don't remember. Which would be really weird for the time frame, to be fair with you.
I think the Portuguese are the bad guys. I think I read that. I mean, don't see, this is part of the problem too, when there's like media that you don't really engage with. I'm getting something wrong, but at the same time, I don't feel like I'm entirely wrong, but I do, I don't know, whatever.
I am willing to be wrong, because I'm not going to play it, because $120 is too much for a video game.
Oh, right, there's that.
It's $120 for the full game.
Yeah, because remember, you're not getting the full game when you buy a game anymore.
Oh, no, I was making the joke that it's like, it's like $170 for me.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
Fuck me, dude. Did you know there was a time when Ubisoft used to sell their games in Canada at price?
That's ridiculous.
Those fucking assholes. They sold out to America.
It's because they're French.
Yeah.
But yeah, $120 is too much for a video game, so I wasn't going to play it anyway. So I'm willing to be wrong. This game might come out and it might not be racist. It might actually be an amazing video game. Whoever still buys Ubisoft games, good for you. Hope you enjoy it. No, thank you. That is $120 I could use to beef up my backlog of physical Switch games that I want to buy before Switch 2 is announced, because that is still the plan, right? And speaking of that, Limited Run Games is releasing on PS5 and Switch. I'm going to get the Switch version. Tomba 1. And I want to buy it, not because I like Tomba 1 and want to play it, but because I really want it to succeed so I get Tomba 2. I never played Tomba 1. I'm actually excited to play it for the first time. I played the shit out of Tomba 2 when I was a child.
Oh, cool.
So it's this like weird Japanese game where you play as this like pink-haired Tarzan man that just wears pants. Or shorts, right?
Yeah, I've heard of Tomba, but I'm not familiar with it, if I'm honest.
Right. And so Tomba 2 is in 3D, but like you can only go left and right, but you can also go up and down when you're at like a crossroads. Like imagine like a 2D plane and there's a background and you can go into the background, right? So it's okay. Like weirdly on rails, but also not. And it was this like side-scrolling adventure where you fight pigs, literally. The enemies are pigs. They're evil. And you do random little tasks for the people, and you go through this like fantastical fantasy world, and there's a bunch of secrets and optional bullshit that really bewildered me as a child. And there's many secrets I never even figured out because I didn't have internet to go look up the solution, right? So my sister and I just had to like abandon some of our objectives. Like, I don't know how to open this temple thing, and it's totally optional, so we're gonna skip it. And it's like, well, what can we do? Right, so it's like I really want to get back to that, and I'm assuming the first game had all of that stuff, but it was literally 2D instead of this like 3D, 2D nonsense, right? Yeah. So really looking forward to that. And yeah, that's gonna run me like $60 because it's a new game, and then like that's only half the budget if I'm not buying Ass Creed, right? Because it's fucking $120. It's like I can go over to the used game store and hopefully not for full price get Fire Emblem Warriors, which I've already committed to buying. I'd also like to pick up Minecraft physical copy if I can. I know what's on the cart is not the latest, but there's updates, right? Mostly for my son. I want him to like the Switch because I don't want to replace his Xbox when it inevitably dies. I want to get him on Nintendo because I don't know. Xbox keeps fucking up and I have no faith in their future.
Yeah. So like, Xbox has basically said that they're done doing anything, any consoles.
Right. And
honestly,
so
switching a PC and you're good.
That's exactly it. And I spent a lot of money finding out that was the answer all along.
Yeah, you're going to miss out on some things. Like, for instance, I'll never regret buying my PS5 because I'm hopelessly addicted to the Dark Souls franchise. So I needed that Demon's Souls. I needed it really badly. And by needed it, I mean I am... I have Stockholm syndrome, I guess. But like ultimately, if that weren't the case, I genuinely wouldn't have bought it. I would have like laughed at the fact that people were clamoring, like sitting there trying to buy one and off of Scalper and shit like that. I'm like, why? There's literally nothing worth buying it for.
Yeah, and similarly, I don't regret my PS5 because Final Fantasy 16 was really good, and so was Stellar Blade. Yeah. But those are the only two games that were PS5 exclusive, one of which, not for long, it's coming to PC.
Quite literally only three games that you need a PS5 for. That, and I guess I will say, okay, fair. I guess going back to Gotcha for a second, I can play them all on my PS5, and it was actually really nice to be able to play them on my PS5 when they had PC problems. Mm-hmm. Because Unity is an asshole engine, but
yeah. Also, my computer is like on its last legs, so if I were to go back to Genshin, PS5 is the way. ZZZ installed on my PS5. I haven't started it yet, so I'm right there with you. Like,
it has its uses, I guess, but you can get by just fine with a Switch and a PC.
Yeah. Also, I gotta give a little bit of praise to the PS5. The Discord app is surprisingly good. Like, it recently updated, very, very recently, right? To where I don't need to use my phone anymore. If I'm on my PS5 and you guys are in voice channels, I can just press the PS button, click on the game base. There's a tab for Discord, and all the Discords I'm in show up, and I can just join and talk on my controller.
Right. I've been doing it a lot lately. You are talking on your controller, which is a problem, but we'll get over it.
Right. I mean, I'm not doing it now, obviously, right? it works really well, and it gets the job done, especially if the PS5 just becomes the live service machine that it was destined to be, right?
Yeah.
Because I also got First Descendant installed, and I still have Helldivers 2 installed. I haven't played in a while, neither of you.
That's okay. Yeah.
It's okay. I enjoyed the shit out of it when it was new.
Helldivers may live again, but it's definitely on the struggle bus.
I absolutely got my $40 worth. I don't regret it. We had a good time.
I did too.
Yeah. So no complaints there. For PS5, right? It's like, okay, Final Fantasy 16 coming to PC. You should probably play it on PC. It's going to be awesome. Stellar Blade still coming to PC. I haven't heard any news otherwise.
Yeah, it'll eventually make it.
Sorry for the distraction there.
I was like, what the fuck?
Funny. I just thought it was so funny.
Fucking sent me something and I lost my whole train of thought. No, it's okay. it's like I don't regret it, but I really want to get my kids on the Nintendo consoles because they seem to be the only ones committed to a physical media future, right?
And they're going out of their way to make promises too, right?
Uh huh. It's like it's still possible that Switch 2, whatever they name it, doesn't do physical, and that just means I won't buy it.
Yep.
I'd be sad if they don't. I don't see what the like at least providing the port. If they want to be like, hey, we got the physical port here. If companies want to make physical versions of their games, like, we're totally okay with it. But Nintendo itself is going digital only, and unless someone wants to make fan whatever versions, like, that would be fine. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how I use my PSP, even though that wasn't officially how they designed it. But
but think about it. The Switch has a long 7-year backlog, mostly of physical games that I could go get, hopefully used for cheap.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, just buy the Switch OLED while they still make them and ride out the next gen without the Switch 2 if they really fail me. Right. And everything would be good. that's my plan. And even the small one, the Switch Mobile, probably not for me, but my kids might like those. And all I gotta do is just put Minecraft on it and they'll love it. Like, there's a lot of scenarios where I'm out and about with the kids, and there's this stereotype. This is more apparent to me as a parent than probably you two, right? But there's a lot of parents out there that are producing what people are calling iPad kids. Their attention span is fucking shot, and they're glued to iPads. They have to have iPads out in public. I saw one the other day. Well, I say the other day. This was a couple weeks back, maybe a couple months back. I was at my local restaurant, right, that I really like, and this family was eating food there, and their kid was sitting there, iPad in hand, with a big freaking headphones on their head, and they just played on their iPad the whole time and didn't cooperate with their parents. And it's like, shit. Glad mine don't do that.
I'm actually glad my little brother dodged that. Because, my little brother, we've talked before about autism and the like. He will wear headphones and have his phone out sometimes when we're out in places. But for him, it's because the crowds fuck with him. Like, the chatter and whatever.
Yeah.
But like, if he need, if we need his attention, or if he need, you know, food is arriving, whatever, he puts everything away all politely and whatever. So it's like, he thankfully dodged that that stuff. But I've seen it too.
Yeah.
In public, you just like the kid. The moment that the like, they could be a fucking like a teenager, and the moment the tablet's ripped from them, they fucking lose their shit.
Yeah, like they're literally glued to their tablet at all hours of the day and throw tantrums when they don't have it. Right, it's like, it's not a parenting tool, it's a computer, right? And it's like,
I feel bad for the kids too, for the record. Yeah. Like, it's not their fault their parents neglected them like that, but
they are developmentally stunted. Like, my kids will still like draw things and play outside and play video games with me that aren't on a fucking tablet.
Yeah,
right, they know how a controller works. Like, it's like, you can't just be on an iPad all the time. Like, like, you'll know it when you see it. Like, those iPad absolutely. Kids are awful.
Yeah. You know what's funny talking about this? I remember my little brother, when he was younger, said he wanted to be a YouTuber. I feel like there was a lot of kids in his age group that were like that. And I remember, like, a couple months ago, I was like, I'm like, I never asked you, do you use, like, TikTok? I'm like, why aren't you, like everyone your age is uploading there? Like, if you still wanted to do all that internet stuff, that might be a good thing to, like, look at. And he looked at me and he was like, TikTok's cringe. I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't see that one coming.
Damn!
At all. I didn't see. I was like, oh, fuck. All right. I did not. How am I not the boomer in this conversation?
God. Really fucking funny. Holy shit.
Yeah, you found the right one eventually, right? So the, you know, and we're actually seeing a lot of that too in just other categories, like
Well, real quick, before you move on, I just bring it up because I really want to get my kids into the Nintendo Switches and mobile handheld gaming, but without making them iPad kids. And I think a Nintendo Switch is a really good way to do that.
Well, I think as long as you didn't like literally raise them on it, I think they'll be fine.
Like, yeah,
I don't know how old they are now. I haven't kept track. I'm bad at keeping track of my own age, but I, from what I understand, they are not at the age anymore where they're gonna get fucking like,
dude, the oldest one, the oldest one, which who I told you on this very podcast when we had him, right? Yeah. He's fucking 7.
Damn,
dude, do you feel old yet?
Yeah, I bro, I found I remember the other night that Demon's Souls came out in, I think it was like 2007. That made me feel old.
Anyway, we interrupted you, Rick. Please take it away.
Yeah, so I was gonna tell you about that. Is actually an issue. Not all of Gen Z and their whatever the next
Gen Alpha.
Is. Yeah, Alpha. Right, man. We're gonna run out of generations at some point. It's like naming storms. But anyways, the where it's like they know how to use simple technology like a tablet, right? But they'll have struggles like doing troubleshooting and shit like that. Things that are basic for people who grew up with the technology as the technology is advancing. Because there was a lot of time where we didn't have the internet. Like, where it'd be like, hey, I need to somehow figure out how to make even simple coding work, right? Or even with the internet open, you wouldn't be able to just Google your problem, like, I'm getting error code XYZ. How do I fix that? Because there are tons, like, any game that you can play now, if you get an error code, you can plop that error code message verbatim into Google and somebody has asked it.
Yeah. It's like, the way I think about it is, like, I am a computer expert. Much like how my father before me was knows how to build a car's engine. I don't know shit about cars, except they need oil changes every once in a while, right? But like, he used to be a mechanic, right? But like, he doesn't know anything about how computers work. It's like, we're on the same level, but like, him, cars, me, PCs, right? Fair. And software. So it's like, the Zoomers and the Gen Alpha people, they'll be good at something, I hope.
At pushing one button.
It's not this.
Yeah, there is the possibility that they're good at pushing one button. You're not wrong, Vic. Or swiping or whatever.
Yeah, I actually saw it was a video about a research study thing, and it was basically stating that a lot of these people are now getting into the workforce and not knowing how to use fucking computers.
Correct.
They grow up on them, but they have no clue what they're doing.
they'll know how to use programs in the computers, but like if they come up to a problem, they'll just be like, hey, can you solve this for me? Because I don't know what's going on. Or they'll, yeah. You're getting a lot of the same problems that your your older parents and your grandparents were having with computers with the newer generation, because they've grown up with the technology readily available and people who will fix the problems with the technology. Cars are a great example. I don't know how to build an engine. I know very little about troubleshooting cars.
Hmm.
But like before me, like especially like country folk who can't just go down and see the mechanic or afford the mechanic, like mechanic trip can be expensive. Getting your computer fixed can also be expensive.
Yep. I think it's like $60 just to get it looked at here.
Yeah, and well, like I had a problem where my computer wasn't turning on. This was back early 2023. And I took it to the shop. They're like, I don't know what's wrong with it either. And then the next day, their actual, like, we're going to take it apart technician came in, you know, because not everybody at every shop is qualified to do everything. And he, you know, does his, you know, check. He turns it on and it turns on. And it's like, we don't know what was wrong with it. We don't have any explanation. It's like, I don't know. And it's never acted up since. But that was still like a... Yeah, like a $60 visit just to lose my computer for 3 days. And not to mention
that's
driving
really weird
with your tower.
Yeah.
Which is always, like, when you're driving with your computer in your car, it's, like, so terrifying.
I still get flashbacks to that fateful
thing. Yeah. I don't know why. I do know why. It's because it's about the same price as my beater.
Yeah. There was this one day where I was moving, and it was raining. And my tower was in my trunk. Jordan was driving. Rick, you were right behind me. There was a car in front of me. Somebody got through a huge puddle, and we had a 4-car pileup. And my hard drive and some of my RAM sticks broke. The rest of the computer was probably fine, but I did eventually replace the whole thing. But like, it did not turn on when I got to the new place.
Yeah, it was a bad day.
Yeah. And that car got really messed up. I'm really glad your car still worked, because you still drive
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still drive the car.
Yeah.
It's actually a requirement to have a functioning car at my job, because we have to be able to drive clients. Because we're not putting them in our personal vehicles.
Hmm.
Liability and all that.
Of course. But yeah, I don't have that car anymore. I have a new car. But anyway. What were we talking about?
Fuck, I don't... Or Gen Z being boomers.
Fuck if I know.
Gen Z being boomers with technology.
That's exactly why they have the nickname Zoomers, because it rhymes with boomers. Like that. Yeah, that's why they are called that. Because they have a lot in common.
Yeah. But, so what else do we have on the agenda? Because I think we've done this one to death.
I think it's time for the unfortunate, necessary, obligatory DEI updates. So... let's round it up.
Okay. DEI sucks. DEI
bad. We can't claim to be a gaming like show if we don't fucking talk about it. It's like kind of the hottest story, right? Like, I hate this. Let me tell you, right? So let's start. Actually, let's start on a positive note. Or at least it's positive for me. Splitgate 2, right? Splitgate 2 had a reveal trailer. In this reveal trailer, they didn't show any gameplay. But... Yeah. I really like Splitgate 1, and I dare say I'm excited for Splitgate 2. Like, I saw some hot takes about the trailer. Some people, it's the same people that Orbit Grums, the same people that they see any diversity at all, and they think DEI has ruined the title, right? And they're just like, the lesbian haircut, rainbow hair. But it's like, Splitgate is a utopian future where they have some gun-based sport with portals. Like,
yeah.
It's like Star Trek. It's a utopian future, not a grimdark future. So, like, I look at these characters and I'm like, this is the tweet I made on the brand account. They look like athletes in a utopian future. Like, I think they nailed it. Like, that's what they should look like in the setting that they have. Like, I compare it in my tweet on the brand account to Concord. Concord is like... what I gather from the trailer, a collection of like thieves and criminals and otherwise, you know, unruly figures, right?
Yeah.
But like, the graphics kind of look like Guardians of the Galaxy, and the way they did their characters, they are like painfully diverse from each other, right? Where the game doesn't have a consistent visual identity and they all look out of place, right? Whereas the characters in the cinematic Splitgate 2 trailer, they look like they belong. They're right where they belong. And it's like, it's not the same fucking thing, but they all got rainbow hair.
Looking at gameplay, like actual in-game gameplay, it actually looks fine.
For Concord?
Oh,
some of the promotional art does look kind of cringy, though.
For Concord or for Splitgate?
No, for Splitgate, sorry.
Yeah.
I think Splitgate 2 looks fine. I think the issue really is going to come down to is how it's monetized, for me personally. Because it's either going to be like Splitgate 1, which is very good, loot boxes, everything's cosmetic, or it's not, and I'm going to have to bad dog them.
Right. It's like, we don't know yet. So all we know is that it's free to play, and it's going to be a class-based shooter similar to Killzone or Team Fortress. Not a hero shooter. They said not a hero shooter. Like, the cinematic trailer looks like a hero shooter. But what they're doing is they have this setting, and they have... They said factions, but they look like sport teams to me, honestly, in this setting that they have.
Maybe they call their sports teams factions in the utopian future.
Yeah. And based
or
on...
Or they're like... based on different factions that they're basically like endorsed, maybe.
Right. So the idea is it's 4v4, similar to the original Splitgate, which I think was either 6v6 or 8v8, whatever. But these factions you pick will determine what loadouts are available to you. Kind of like Killzone.
Okay. X-Defiant.
Or like X-Defiant, I guess, is probably the most recent example. I was thinking Killzone, right?
Yeah, but not everybody has that cultural touchstone. I'm sorry, you're old.
Yeah, I am old. But yeah, or like Team Fortress, even older, right? But like a class-based shooter where, yeah, there's loadouts. You don't have all the same shit all the time. But you are pooled into a specific pool of things you can have based on the faction you picked. And the best, most successful teams will mix and match these factions, not just have all double down on one. And it's like, I'm fine with that. That's not a hero shooter.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, thinking back as early as we've talked about it when it first got added back to Steam. Fucking the enemy territory Wolfenstein.
Yeah,
class-based. The whole thing is literally class-based. Yeah,
and it's like this. Seeing the discourse about the Splitgate 2 trailer makes me feel old because I see these same people bitching about rainbow hair. Like, they're saying, oh, yeah, it's a hero shooter. I don't believe what they just said about it not being a hero shooter. Look at this description on Steam. There was one guy on Twitter that said, hey, it's a hero shooter. I don't like that. And people were telling him, no, they said this, or it's not a hero shooter. And his reply to all these accounts was a screenshot from the Steam page that kind of sounds like a hero shooter, but it didn't say it.
Oh,
right?
Splitgate 2 directly said, this is not a hero shooter.
Exactly.
Right, in class-based... Yeah. Class-based shooters have been a thing for a long time. What's suddenly the problem with
them? The Zoomers are the problem. They haven't played them. And so they're like, oh, this sounds like a hero shooter, and I am sick of Overwatch and didn't like Concord, right? And it's like, but Team Fortress isn't a hero shooter. Killzone isn't a hero shooter.
No.
Wolfenstein Enemy Territory is not a hero shooter.
I would say Team Fortress 2 is probably the closest class shooter you're going to see that comes to being a hero shooter. But
yeah,
even
they
then,
do have abilities in that... That's, I think, the problem with hero shooters isn't necessary, and this could be a thing, is, like, not just their boisterous personalities for each hero, right? But you also have the abilities.
Right. Quake Champions is a hero shooter, even though they just have one little ability and one little passive between them all. It's like the bare minimum, but it's still a hero shooter.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the difference is going to be how it feels when you play it, right? Like, if it feels like a hero shooter, they can call it not a hero shooter all they want, but...
Well, I can actually break this down really easily, too, like, the difference between the two. So, a hero shooter, let's say, I don't know, you got Bob. Bob carries a fucking minigun, and he's the only guy with a minigun. You can only have one Bob on your team, and if you're playing a ranked version, you probably only have one Bob in the entire game. If it's a class shooter, you can play... I don't know, John Smith, the minigunner guy, and your whole team can be that. And that's
a good point.
That's quite literally the difference between the two. You could have two teams in ranked play all play a minigun guy.
I'm just saying I'm right there with the people that want to call out and disparage new games coming out that have obvious pandering or other, you know, bad design, right? Like Concord. And it, but it's like, yeah. these same people are now coming after Splitgate after the one trailer, and it's like, their conclusions appear to be wrong. Like,
also, what's wrong with rainbow hair?
It, nothing. That's the thing. It's like, they think it's like a red flag, or like, this is a sign that it's this other thing that wasn't in the trailer at all. And it's like, you are just looking for reasons to be mad. Do you even play video games?
It's the Twitter crowd, but in reverse. Like, the other side of the fucking coin.
Well, it's, you like, know,
if I want to put rainbow hair on my character, does not mean that I'm gay. It doesn't have to mean that. If you like rainbows, you like rainbows, dude. Who the fuck cares?
Well, I think kind of what's happening is the moral guardians are switching again, right? Like, yeah. When we were growing up in the 90s, the moral guardians were all, you know, blood red Republican in the U.S.
God-fearing.
Yeah, God-fearing Republicans. Video games are the devil's work. They're the reason that Columbine happened and all the other shit. But in the mid-2000s to 10s and early 20s, we had a lot of people where they were, you know, the other side of the cheek, where it was the Democrats, the, you know, the God-not-fearing atheists, as it were, who were very much into, like, oh, you know, somebody said something wrong and they're involved with the game. See Hogwarts Legacy, for a recent example. Stellar Blade. Stellar Blade's this year's Hogwarts Legacy, where, you know, there are a whole bunch of people who are, you know, shitting on it, trying, maybe making up true stories, or not making up, but maybe talking about true stories, the people that the company fired.
They didn't have an excuse. That was so made up. Yeah.
Yeah. For no being proof. Quote anti-feminism, but you know, there's zero proof of it other than one or two Twitter accounts that didn't exist prior to and only existed for like 6 hours, basically.
It's really weird, right? Because like Stellar Blade pissed off everyone somehow. Like with Hogwarts Legacy, you have like, you know, J.K. Rowling, who owns the property but wasn't involved in the game, and that one guy that didn't really contribute much to the game that everyone hated, right? So like you had like something tangible to hate on. Right, which was still stupid. But
yeah.
With Stellar Blade, they literally had nothing, right?
Of course and not.
That reminds me, I saw a really interesting theory about the outfit sensor. So we've covered this before in previous episodes. TLDR, disc build of the game and first day patch of the game, they changed some outfits. They covered her up a little bit. And everyone blames Sony, blah, 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 right? But they insist it wasn't Sony. That's the vision we had for the outfit. I heard another theory that is way more believable than all the theories that came before.
Oh, really?
They did not have the license for the outfits because they were based on real outfits made by real clothing companies. and they did not pay them for the spot. So they had to change them.
It's the Call of Duty issue.
To be legally distinct. So yeah. That's why they were so eager to patch in on like the third or fourth patch. Like more revealing outfits that don't violate the copyright.
Yeah, early Call of Duty had this issue where they couldn't use certain gun names.
And of course they can't talk about it. Like somebody had to dig up like, hey, this outfit, like the bunny outfit, is for sale from this company that's popular in some other country, not America, right? And it's like, oh, that's the exact same outfit. Oh, that's intellectual property. Oh, shit. They can't admit fault or they'll lose in court.
Yeah, I was about to say, if they admit fault, that company will fuck it blood in the water. Because if they don't know it's there and whatever, and they keep their mouth shut, and then there's no problem. But you might as well cover your ass.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, controversy resolved. Is that going to make, like, the Grums orbiters of Twitter, like, happy? No.
Yeah, grifters will always grift. They will always find a reason to be mad and angry. They will always find a reason to bitch and moan. They don't actually play video games. They pilot their Twitter accounts.
Yeah, has Grums actually made any progress on his game since,
no.
you know...
Fuck no.
Okay.
No,
literally nothing. Other than updating the fucking page where you can buy the game. Literally it.
Man, yeah. I hope Nick kicks his ass eventually. I know that Nick...
Well, anybody. I'll take anybody.
Talking about Nick, actually, is a great segue here because we wanted to talk about him anyways for being...
I'm so proud
a straight
Nick.
G.
He, but real quick,
I'm
though.
I'm so proud of him.
Oh,
go ahead.
Shit.
I did have a Splitgate take.
Well, let's hear it.
So, kind of like transitioning back to the boomer idea.
Oh, no.
I gotta say, I watched the trailer and I don't know. Gameplay, it feels like the fucking Halo 3 to Reach for me.
They didn't really show any gameplay, except they showed a portal spawning from a throne object, and I don't like that.
I will say, you're right, they don't show any gameplay here, but just based on what you could infer from what they show, we can assume that a lot of that's gameplay. Some of it I like the seeing through walls thing. You know, I love Blacklight Retribution. I thought that was a fucking cool mechanic. I'm okay with that, but then, like the slow field, you got the fucking the weird placeable portal, which feels weird. Why not just keep the like portal mechanics the way they were? Like that's a little odd, and just things like that. It's like it literally, like, people already didn't like the Halo 3 did that, but they weren't that big of a deal. They were like negligible and no one really gave a shit. But then Reach and subsequent Halo games really upped it up. And they fucked a lot of other things up too, to be fair. But like, and it's just like that kind of comes down, and it almost feels like Splitgate 2 is, I mean, obviously this is just from a single trailer, but it feels like they might be going in that same destructive path where their game may be fine in terms of subject matter and whatever, and probably still even as a shooter probably plays fine. But how much of that's going to translate into them just basically killing the identity they already had?
Right.
Like,
now,
like Halo did.
I have some hope, because all the people working on Splitgate 2 worked on Splitgate 1. And Splitgate 1 was fucking awesome. So it's like, I feel like they know what made their game fun. And I assume they're not gonna, like, intentionally fuck it up.
I hope they have proper testing phases. And they get a proper amount of, like, feedback. And they don't just accept the, you know, the, oh my god, this game's fucking great. And they're like, oh, well, that's a green light. Let's launch it. I hope they listen to everybody that, like, has a take on the game and actually, like, draw a conclusion, not just based on the popular opinion. Because I think a lot of games get fucked because of that. The popular opinion, they launch that, and then, you know, the game dies because they didn't actually hit their core audience.
Mm-hmm. As for the characters of the trailer, like, I don't see a problem. Like, they look like they fit in the universe that they're going for.
They look fun. Right? I mean, in game, you're not even going to see the rainbow hair. You got a fucking helmet on.
Yeah, that too. But like, I feel like the people that are bitched about that are like fishing for a reason to be mad.
Yeah.
Just like they were with Stellar Blade. Like,
it's the Grums, the same kind of Grums orbiters, right? Where they just are always looking for a reason to cry DEI every time.
Right.
And not everything is DEI. And DEI, on principle, isn't a problem.
Right. Like, they're right about some shit. They've been right before, but it doesn't mean their word is gospel, right? Because they're like the Kotaku blogger, or the bloggers that are aligned with Kotaku, and obviously all the recent like stuff that happened with like the DEI detected group. Like they are making fun of some pretty bad games.
Oh, absolutely, there are problems.
Yeah, and they're not wrong about that stuff. But it's like, but now to stay relevant, they need to fish for the next like big thing to bitch about. And I feel like innocent games that aren't really a problem are getting caught in their crossfire, and I don't like that.
Yeah, so I guess we'll come back to Nick then, because talking about games that should or should not be in the crossfire real quick, I want to talk about Flintlock. Tell me, how good or bad is Flintlock?
Okay, so the context is, we talked about Flintlock briefly on our show. Flintlock was, I gotta go a little further back, right? So the reason why we have to keep talking about DEI every episode is because that's the current big discourse on gaming on the internet, right? Now, it all started when this one, you know, Brazilian guy who now lives in Japan created a Steam group that looks for a really specific consulting agency called Sweet Baby Inc. I'm just repeating myself for the first time listeners who may not be familiar with our previous episodes, right? So he made a group and he put together a list of games that were known to be worked on by this very specific company. And he alleges that they are responsible for ruining those games, because like their entire goal is to, it's diversity and equity and inclusion, DEI, right? Like that's what they're doing. That's what they're for. Right. And some of the games they worked on were real stinkers, and some of them were whatever, fine, I guess. Right. And we have no idea how much they contributed to those games or what they actually did. Right. It's just, it's a boogeyman to apply to an obvious problem. Right.
It's like, weirdly, as much as there is potentially a problem there, it's becoming a manufactured buzzword.
It is very quickly. Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of self-defeating, because like they had a point when they got started with all this, right? But now they're just whack-a-moling whatever they see that could be construed as controversial. So Flintlock was one of these games. So Flintlock also had Sweet Baby Inc. as a consultant on their game. And so they put it in their list, and that was kind of the end of that. But then somebody, I don't know if it was, I think it was first Cabrutus, the DEI list guy, right? He had somebody reach out to him from the A44 Games, the company that made Flintlock Siege of Dawn, which was not out yet. And we only know this because he told Grums, and Grums told the fucking internet with this huge following, right? That this was a conversation that happened. So they reached out to Cabrutus saying, hey, could you please take our game off the list? And he said, why? And they said, there was a lot of strife and drama at our studio. They went on to give us some examples, but they said, as for the Sweet Baby stuff, like, we took that stuff out. We totally didn't listen to them. Please trust me, bro. It's not that bad. And he was like, how can you prove this? Can I have like an early copy of the game or something? Which I've criticized that take, because I was like, who are you to request an early copy of an unreleased game? Like, they're obviously not going to do that, right?
Yeah, and they stopped replying to him.
Yeah, they but by not replying to him after that, they've offered no alternative to prove what they were saying, because it could have been made up. It could have been nobody, right? But it's like, given how this game turned out, the story that was given, it was very believable. So the story that they were given, TLDR, was they had this, I think it was the COO, come in, that is no longer the COO, but while during their reign, they siphoned off a lot of the company's funds to fund their VFX company on the side, which was then brought in to work on the game, which is like not legal, right? That's really shady and suspicious. But it was also during this that they brought in Sweet Baby Inc., and they race swapped their protagonist. That's why the protagonist sticks out and doesn't look like they belong in the world. Not because of their race is different, but because like the character design is like totally like not like the rest of the characters, right?
It's like they built her on a different program.
She looks like she's from a different game.
She looks, like she looks extremely like, I don't have a better word other than lanky. It just looks out of place. Like the body makeup. Or body, like, form, shape, whatever.
And the items.
To everything else in the world just seems off-putting. I don't even know how to fully explain it.
Like, the battle axe that she wears in the cover art of the game and her like, weapon, they look like little sticks. Like, they don't look like weapons. Like
the flintlock, it looks like it has a barrel that tapers out, which basically means that the moment she fired any bullet through it, the end would explode.
Yeah, it looks like it gets smaller at the end. It looks...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's magic, but yeah, she doesn't.
Fair, but it doesn't look magic.
I don't know.
Also, it doesn't really jive well with the idea of it being a flintlock either.
Yeah, I'm just saying she looks like she's from a different game, and maybe the game she's really from is cool, but this one isn't. And the critics seem to agree. So I have OpenCritic open in front of me. Let me refresh. So OpenCritic currently has 25 critic reviews, which I acknowledge is not very many, right? But only 42% of these critics recommend the game, and the average score is 70 out of 100. Let me give you a few highlights from the big blogs. PC Gamer, 6 out of 10. IGN, 7 out of 10. IGN Italy, 6 out of 10, right? Gaming Trends, 6 out of 10. Game Rant, 3.5 out of 5. Games Machine, 8 out of 10. Interesting. Let me give you a few highlights from the words. Where do I get that? Hold up.
Highlights.
So, I quote from IGN, Jada Griffin. It may not stand out from the pack, but Flintlock, the Siege of Dawn, continuously found ways to entertain me with flashy combat and swift movement. That's what a nice thing to say about a 7 out of 10. They also gave Stellar Blade a 7 out of 10. They didn't say very many nice things about that.
Well, that's because they're kind of racist against Asians.
Right. Abby Stone, PC Gamer, 6 out of 10. A serviceable slice of Souls-like fantasy that doesn't do enough to stand out from an overcrowded genre. Huh. Now, Alessandra Borgonovo, IGN Italy, 6 out of 10. A game that lacks a sense of direction with an exposition as bland as its gameplay. On paper, some things could have been interesting, but when you look at the actual play of the game, the feel... Wait. Hold on. On paper, some things could have been interesting, but when you actually play the game, they feel disconnected. Sorry, it's translated from Italian. Joshua Duckworth, Game Rant, 3.5 out of 10. Or sorry, 3.5 out of 5. Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn excels in many areas as it falls short, meaning players' mileage will vary based on where they can compromise. Basically, not looking good. Now, for contrast, Stellar Blade, which I've talked about at length on this podcast, has 124 critic reviews. It's like released today, so this number will grow for Flintlock. But 84% of critics recommend it, and the top critic average is 82 out of 100. And IGN gave it the same score, 7 out of 10. But like, this is obviously a better game, right? Than Flintlock Siege of Dawn. I had Steam chart pulled. Oh god, I must have closed the tab. Hold on, Steam charts. So the all-time peak on Steam is 469 players.
It came out today or was it yesterday?
I believe it came out today. It is release day. And 469 was the all-time peak of concurrent players on Steam. Now, this is a Game Pass title, so maybe they're all on Xbox. I don't know.
Oh, fair. You know, there's some fairness in that.
And but we like, don't get those numbers released.
We don't. But I have many doubts. Like, if Helldivers taught us anything, it's that console gamers are dying.
Oh, yeah. Was it like 75% PC?
I forget exactly their numbers, but like, if you look up Helldivers right now, so we can do a quick comparison on Steam, I will look at the app I have on my phone that tells me how many people are currently online total.
Okay, you do that. I'm pulling up Helldivers 2. There are, as of 32 minutes ago, 19,195 players on Steam.
Okay, there are 25,741 total, so that means, yeah.
Majority are still on PC.
And if we extrapolate those numbers for the Game Pass, we can give them about a, you know, make it a third of the players are on Game Pass because, you know, more people are playing Game Pass, right? Even PC players are playing on Game Pass or whatever.
Right. So what does that bring them to? About 1,000? Maybe at best? 1,000 players?
We'll highball them and say that they've got 1,000 players just because. That's not keeping your studio open.
No, like, this game was in development hell, and the studio siphoned off a lot of money for corruption reasons. And it's like, I dread to think about the people working there. They probably should look for new jobs, because I don't think they're going to be around. And I don't enjoy saying that, but, like, this is bad for them. Like, that's not good.
No, that's definitely the end of the... I don't want to say the end of the world, but the end of the studio kind of numbers. But I don't know. Redfall still hasn't killed their studio, right? Oh, no. Redfall's the one that killed their studio. What? Justice League hasn't killed its studio yet.
Yeah, surprising.
The rumor right now is that studio is going to be making the director's cut version of Hogwarts Legacy. I know, right? Why wouldn't you just hire the previous team or something?
It's like they didn't do anything wrong. Oh, well. Let's talk about Nick now.
Yeah, I do want to talk about Nick, because dude is a fucking G.
Yeah, like, I absolutely found newfound respect for Nick Calandra. So I guess for first-time listeners, let's explain the context, right? So Nick Calandra is the former editor-in-chief at The Escapist. When he got laid off, everyone else quit on the spot to follow him and start a new thing, where they do exactly what The Escapist does. But it's owned by the people that work there rather than gamers. That's with a U, G-A-M-U-R-S, that previously owned The Escapist. What a bad employer that must have been, right? So they basically took all of the value from The Escapist and made their own brand and moved on without them, which was really badass, right? And they're just doing their own thing. They have a variety of shows on their channel where they cover games at various angles, and it's pretty good stuff, honestly.
Yeah, and they get to have a lot more freedom in trying new things out, because they don't have corporate overlord anymore.
Right, but they still get review codes. So enter Stuttering Craig, you know, the guy that created Screw Attack, which got sold off and chopped into a million pieces, right? Not because it failed, but because it was successful and he sold it, right? Whatever. So Stuttering Craig obviously has a business background. He knows how to make a successful brand. There's a lot of reasons to trust him, though I don't. And he has a podcast called Side Scrollers, where Grums and his orbiters have been frequent guests. He also frequently has Melanie Mack as a guest, who's this like weird like Christian influencer girl who doesn't like the gays.
Yeah, she looks like she's going to be in an alt porno. Like,
yeah.
Like, she looks like you're one day going to be going through the hub or whatever, and you're going to see her at the top of the list. Because
she looks like an OnlyFans girl, but her content is shitting on OnlyFans girls because they need to come to Christ. Like,
yeah, basically.
What a weird combo.
I know. She, yeah, it, like, she's like, I don't know. She's like the 2024 version of the youth pastor that they have to lie about their, you know, all the gangs they ran with or whatever, you know, like their street cred. Because I don't know if people are familiar with, like, Christians, but, like, the Christians, like, connect to the youth, always have to, like, fluff up their resume about how, like, dark their past was. And she looks like she does that. But no, she's right. Just, like, super, like, trad wife-style Christian.
Right, and to be fair, she has a long background in media, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, she's not dumb either.
That's and she's not dumb either. So, like, I don't want to, like, sell her short, right? But, like, yeah. She does have the forbidden opinions.
Oh, absolutely, she does.
Right. So that is a thing that will matter in a minute. She's a frequent guest on this very same podcast, but it's a Stuttering Craig's podcast that usually has four people in it, one of whom is usually a guest, and then the other three are from his like short rotation of friends. Right. So Stuttering Craig has announced that he wants to do his own video game award show. We all covered it on the show before. I really think it was a missed opportunity to do Value for Value, but he obviously doesn't know what that is. Right. Maybe it'll be us. Maybe we should do that. I don't know. But basically, he's like, I want to do this thing where you pay like $30 a year to have a vote and to help manage the show, regardless of scale, whether it's going to be like as big as the Game Awards or if it's going to be at a fucking Olive Garden. Right. There's going to be a panel of like administrators, but he has some hard requirements for those administrators that they can't be Access Media. Which he draws the line for Access Media at you get review codes, right? Because there's this, he used to get review codes. He understands this business. He ran Screw Attack. He's of the strong opinion that if you receive review codes, you are expected to do quid pro quo for the people giving you codes. Like if you slam them in your review, they stop giving you codes. So you go easy on them or whatever, right? Like there's this expectation, right? And he's, that's kind of fair. Like that's a fair thing to believe. I'm not going to say he's wrong, right? That means you can't be on the administrative council for his award show, but you could totally vote if you pay the money, right? So Nick Calandra on Twitter sees his announcement because he recently renamed it. It had a different name before. Refer to our old episodes where we told you what that name was. I already forgot. But he's calling it, what was it? The Real Game Awards, I think is what he's calling it. A play on the Game Awards run by the Dorito Pope, right? So it's like the Real Game Awards where gamers decide the categories and control all the votes and it's totally transparent. And it's like, I personally like the idea. I don't trust him to run it. I won't be giving him $30, but like the idea of a game award show that is completely run by gamers and voted on by gamers in a transparent way is a way better idea than what we have with the Dorito Pope, because it's obviously corrupt, right? Like we've all seen it, right? There ain't no way God of War Ragnarok is best music that year. Fuck no, right? That game was shit. I played it.
You know, but they had to they had to give it something. You know, it absolutely, the game basically plays itself, which is the worst part.
Right. And we've covered that on our show too. So like go back for that too.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's absolutely room for a game awards show, and Stuttering Craig is gonna go the distance and like cool, good for him, I guess, right? So Nick Calandra, misinterpreting what his announcement is about. He quote retweets him and he says something to the effect of like, these people can't stand video games and people who play video games and the people who report on video games, and they're going to do their own award show. What the fuck is this? That's not his literal words. It's kind of what he meant, though. And then Stuttering Craig, as he always does, replies and he's like, come on our show. Let's talk about it. And he'll say that to anyone, no matter how viciously he's shat on them on his show. Like, he's always like, come on our show. We'll talk about it. And Nick Lander was like, all right, I will. And he fucking did. Oh my God. Like, so not only did he go on his show, like he checked them at so many opportunities. Like, he didn't spend a whole lot of time making fun of Melanie Mack, but he was very clear. Like, I don't agree with anything that you believe. You believe in some awful shit. And you're also wrong about this that we're here to talk about today, right? Like, he did not entertain her at all. Like, he was, like, pretty stiff with her, which she kind of deserves it, right?
Yeah.
She absolutely deserves it. What am I saying? But when it comes to the award show, like, Nick had a dialogue with Stuttering Craig on his podcast. And at the end, you know, he agreed with him that, okay, your idea isn't bad. And I misunderstood what you meant, because he made it like the way it was advertised, the way Nick understood it going into the podcast was, oh, you are taking money from people and they're going to vote. But if they're access media or if they're people you don't like, you're kicking them out. And it's like, no, what they believe does not matter. Anyone can vote. You just got to pay so you're not a bot. Right. It's just you can't be access media to administrate the show. And it's like, that is completely reasonable and awesome, right? And Nick was like, okay, I don't actually have a problem with that. And he even suggested, well, maybe Second Wind should have its own award show. Like, and Stuttering Craig was like, yeah, it's better than the Game Awards. You should also have a show, right? They were like kind of agreeing on that stuff. And it's like, yeah, everyone agrees with this. Everything you're saying is reasonable, right?
Yep.
But when they brought up like one of the examples was the Black Myth Wukong story. Now, we've covered that on our show too, right? Where I believe... our coverage, we talked about how like one side was like, hey, it's a protection racket, but also like they're using ChatGPT to derive this, and that's kind of bullshit. We don't really know. Right. Turns out the original coverage from IGN that does not use ChatGPT to translate Chinese articles was actually correct. Right. Much like we suspected. And Nick called him right out on that. Like, I think that was actually one of Melanie Mack's points, because she kept bringing up Wukong, right? And it's like, well, they hate Wukong because they turned down SBI, they didn't pay SBI as a protection racket. And it's like, that's not what the thing said. The thing that you guys were reporting on was like ChatGPT bullshit. And Stuttering Craig was like, we're not reporters. We don't report the news. We just comment on what's being talked about. And it's like, what kind of an answer is that? That's dumb. Like,
yeah, that's a not
no
such
responsibility.
A
non-answer. I know. That's...
No, and absolutely, Nick was right to call them out on that shit.
Yeah, and it's like, what a badass. Because, like, think about it. After the podcast happened, and he got off, we saw, like, Alyssa Mercante from Kotaku and, like, one other guy basically say he did the wrong thing. He should not have gone on their show. You are validating them. And it's like, no. He just checked them in front of their entire audience.
Yeah.
How many people that are deep in this DEI bad rabbit hole, no nuance allowed, would wake up because they got checked on their show? It's like, I think his work going on that podcast and making those claims and checking them at those instances was probably more valuable than like the last like 10 articles Alyssa Mercante wrote, maybe last 100.
Also, like, could you imagine if she ran a podcast and somebody checked her?
Like, yeah, like
she would have a fucking conniption.
Yeah, because she's no different than they are. She just doesn't hate the gays. Like, they're functionally no better other than that regard.
Yeah, I think the only person that has problems with the gay people is Melanie on that show, dude, specifically. And like I can't defend that. I'm certainly not defending Melanie's opinions, but like, people are going to have those opinions, and you're going to have to deal with them in the real world. They may not say it,
but like, all those bloggers that either are allied or adjacent or otherwise with Kotaku, like, they wouldn't even dare do what Nick did. And now they're shitting on him for doing it. Like, oh, you were buddy-buddy with Melanie Mack. It's like, no, he was calling her out to her own audience on her own show. That's not the same thing.
No, it really isn't. And... you know, those people need to unfuck themselves too.
Yeah. He came into their echo chamber and took a sledgehammer to their wall. Like,
yeah.
Why are you mad at him?
Well, because he actually did the thing that
they wish they could do. Yeah, they won't.
Well, no, they don't wish that they could do it, because if they wish they could do it, they would just do it. Because, again, you know, I'm going to beat this dead horse until it's alive again. That they're choosing the one thing that doesn't require them to leave the house. They're choosing to, bad dog people for, like, reaching a hand out and saying, hey, maybe we can sort this out together.
Yeah.
So it's like, good on Nick Calandra for going on there. And basically the outcome was he's sick of the Kotaku bloggers too, who like immediately turned their back on him for going on that show. He's just like, y'all are like fucking fake friends. Holy shit.
In so many words, he basically said that they're the real problem, not anybody that has bad opinions. It's the people who refuse to talk. Because bad opinions can be fixed, or to a degree at least, or at least proven wrong.
Or if the person you don't like, who has opinions you don't agree with, has an open invite to their show, you could take that invite and you can just go like fucking dunk on them, right? Like,
yeah.
If you are opposed to somebody, but you're the one with no open invite or closing communications, you are the problem.
Yeah. No, there's no other correct answer. If you're not willing to converse with people, there are people that in your life that you're going to despise, that are going to have terrible opinions, and you know what? They're going to be like a coworker, maybe even your fucking boss at work, and you got to make a product together. You got to, you know, you got to do the thing to get paid so you can have the things you want.
Yeah, and it's like, in some ways, both Nick and Stuttering Craig were kind of dense when talking to each other, right? I have to also give some props to Craig for allowing him on, right? And not like muting him, kicking him or whatever when they weren't agreeing on shit. Like, it was refreshing to see, you know? Because I don't think Craig's that bad of a dude, right? And I don't think him associating with Melanie Mack makes him necessarily a bad person, right?
No, we all have friends with terrible opinions. Straight up. If you think you don't have friends with terrible opinions,
you might be the friend.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it might be you. Keep that in mind, everybody. We do all have some terrible opinions. All of us hold deep inside some bad opinions. If you don't think you do, you're wrong.
That's your bad opinion.
That might be my bad opinion.
I meant them. Sorry,
Anyway, that's it for your obligatory DEI update. My whole bullet point list. Nick Calandra has gone on to say he's going to stick to his brand and focusing on creating stuff and not Twitter drama. And that's something that I commented on with the brand account on Twitter, is that the one thing that all these bloggers that are now shitting on him can't compete with is that his brand actually covers video games. Like, it's another journalist versus YouTubers kind of problem, right? Where, like, so he doesn't have a website. He has a YouTube channel that has several shows that produce high-quality content that show gameplay, right? And, like, these bloggers aren't doing that. They're just writing articles.
He employs Yahtzee. They ain't got shit.
They don't stand a chance.
So, yeah. No, it's...
He'll be fine.
Yeah, no. Nick could shut off Twitter, like, forever, and it wouldn't affect his bottom line in the slightest.
Yeah, and they're doing really good for themselves.
Like, oh, yeah. And they're leaving, like, the reports open that anybody can see. Like, this is where the money goes. This is how much money came in. This is how much money went out. They're super open.
Mm-hmm. It's just...
I don't know.
It's funny. It's funny to me. Anyway, I have a few more notes on my agenda.
Yeah.
We can move through them pretty quickly here.
Lightning round.
Yeah. No reason for the episode to drag too long past the golden ratio, which we've already passed. So, rapid fire. Halo TV. It's canceled. We won. Woo. We did it, boys. No, I'm just kidding. Like, I only watched the first couple episodes. I actually didn't watch the second season. But,
Well, John Halo is finally unemployed.
Mm-hmm. I forgot how dumb the story was until I saw someone, like, tweeted on Twitter about how, of course it failed. It was about a helmetless Master Chief having a sexual relationship with a human Covenant princess. And it's like, oh yeah, it was that dumb. I forgot.
Yeah, and the only time he got to be badass is when they knocked him out and made Cortana do it. See, that's where you start to be like, oh, this is the bad DEI.
Yeah.
Like, dumb men can't do anything. Not saying, you know, this is not a women can't do anything or they need men to do it kind of shit thing. No. Mm-hmm. No, everybody is capable, and pretending that only one side or the other is capable is not helpful for anybody.
Yeah, and on the same subject as bad DEI, not to say that this is bad DEI, it's probably just bad writing. I haven't seen it, right? But The Acolyte is over. Everybody, this is Dylan from Editing Day, a couple days after this audio was recorded. And I'll have you know, I cut out like 30 minutes of straight yapping about Disney, about a bunch of shit we've already talked about. And if this is your first time coming to the Melomancy podcast, I would encourage you to just go back through our backlog when some of these stories about like Disney, The Acolyte. I think eventually we started talking about fucking the new Spider-Man game. And all the fumbles that it made and some shit. And it's like, we've covered these topics before. I had a little too much to drink, so I didn't steer the conversation very good. So I'm just going to cut all of that audio out and bring us to the outro. So I'm just going to insert this little short little audio clip in. Because it kind of unnaturally jumps to the outro because I cut all that fucking audio out. Honestly, you deserve better. So thank me later. This has been Melomancy Podcast, episode 91. You can see Victim pull the slot machine lever on at twitch.tv/victimofgaming. You can find me on the Noster Network at Dylon at melomancy.cafe, but I'm also on the Fediverse, where my primary following is. I want Noster to work out, but there's just not as many people on it. But of course, you'll find me there at shitposter.world/Dylon. You'll find Rick here at shitposter.world/skooma_dealer. And we'll be back at this again in about 2 weeks' time. Hopefully, we'll have more video games to talk about.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Ugh.